Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, to get 30, to get 20, 20, 20, to get 20, 20, to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Good afternoon, good morning, good evening, wherever you are in the world. I am Russell Tovey.
And I'm Robert Diamond.
And this is Talk Art.
Welcome to Talk Art.
How are you, Robert?
I'm feeling incredibly present.
Ooh.
I feel like I'm in the present moment.
That's great.
And I bizarrely have a Kate Bush song in my head.
Which one's that?
It's where she goes, I put this moment here. I put this moment here, like that. It's like
what
a kind of
called?
Like poetic
what
kind
album
of moment.
Is it on?
I can't remember, but it's in my mind right now. And there is something about our guest today.
Yes.
Her paintings make me feel very present and in the moment.
In the moment, yes.
Yeah. I'm very alive.
Yes.
And I grew up near a river, the River Thames, and nature was a big part of my childhood because my family were Welsh.
Yes.
And I used to go to Tenby a lot, and to where my dad was from, and also Newport and Swansea. And
we're getting a big thumbs up from our guest.
Abergavenny. So there is a relationship I have from my memories of childhood, but also about the things that I love now, which
landscapes.
Is going on walks as well. And
we love a walk. We've walked to many places, haven't we?
We love a walk.
We do love
and
a walk.
Today we are going to take an art walk.
Yes.
Looking at these incredible paintings.
Yeah.
We are currently surrounded. We're at Flowers Gallery in central London
on
in
Cork Street.
And they have very kindly brought out many of our guest paintings. So we are surrounded by the most
beautiful. We're in an immersive experience.
Vivid, bright, wonderful paintings, figurative and also landscapes.
Yes.
So we would like to welcome our guest,
Lucy Jones.
Hi.
Hi, Lucy.
Welcome.
What can I say to that? Thank you for having me.
Of course, it's an absolute honour to have you here today.
We've been big fans of your work for the past year. We actually discovered your work quite recently. But you've obviously been making work for a long time, many decades.
Yeah.
And we discovered it through another guest on Talk Art called Lena Dunham. And she is an actress and writer and screenwriter in America.
Mm-hmm.
And she...
An artist.
Oh, an artist, of course, because she makes watercolours herself, which actually you'd probably really like.
Yeah.
I have to show you.
Yeah. A lot of self-portraits.
Yeah. And she reposted a link to one of your interviews with The Guardian.
Right.
And I read it and I was so inspired by it. And luckily I knew Matthew Flowers a tiny bit and then he sent me one of your books and then I got to sort of learn all about your work. So big shout out to Lena and thank
you. Yes, thank you.
But
we're really excited to be here today. So you've travelled down from Shropshire for this, where you're based now, right?
I have, yes. I stayed the night somewhere, but yeah, came from Shropshire.
Hannah, how are you feeling? Are you feeling alert or...?
I'm very alert. I did have a large cup of coffee this morning.
Good one.
Yeah, I did kick myself off, as it were.
Wonderful.
So, yeah. Right. What do you want to know?
Well, so we talk about Shropshire then, which plays a massive part in your work now.
Yeah,
right?
Just now. I mean, oddly, you were talking about the Thames, and I used to base all my work around the Thames.
Oh, wow.
Okay.
Right.
When I lived in London.
Where did you live in London?
In a way, all my life up to about 15 years ago.
Yeah.
And then we moved to Shropshire. And that was a real shock.
I bet.
Because it's so green.
Right. That's true.
All the trees.
But like a culture shock. You found that.
Yeah.
Was you worried to make the transition from if you'd been making work in London, especially to Shropshire?
Yeah. No, I was. I mean, I really thought, oh my God, that this is mad. But in fact, I probably had kind of finished with, not finished with London. Nobody can be finished with London.
I second that, yes.
But I'm very glad I did because it gave me my work a whole new lease of life.
Yes.
And just working outside and having my little allotment and my garden, and I can crawl around my allotment trying to grow food. It's the most expensive food in the world.
Oh, wow.
That I grow.
All organic.
But also I need so much help to actually grow the food. It costs quite a lot of money.
Oh, my God. Well, you've got to keep selling your paintings.
Exactly.
Well, so let's talk about. So you mentioned crawling around. So you're an artist that was born with cerebral palsy.
That's right.
And that's affected you physically when you're creating art. But what's been so wonderful about your work is that hasn't took you back. It's kind of also you've made that your art.
Yeah. That is very true because from when I got back from the Rome Scholarship, I started doing more and more self-portraits.
Yeah.
So I balanced it against cityscapes, which was either Rome or London, and self-portraits. And I slowly began to kind of look at myself, which I found quite difficult at first. And I developed my painting over the last, 30 years? And began to kind of explore a bit more about disabilities within those self-portraits, but that also included the dyslexia, which is big problem.
For you, and you were only diagnosed with dyslexia in your 30s?
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
So prior to that, you didn't, it was a thing that you just couldn't really work out what was...
Well, I kind of knew that it was dyslexia, but I hadn't actually been diagnosed, and actually, getting that diagnosis was a great relief because you feel so guilty about not being able to read very well, not being able to write, or kind of as if you're in a kind of no man's land.
Right.
And in a way, that mimics the cerebral palsy because I lose my balance quite often. So I have to be very sure of how to move, okay? And the dyslexia also puts you off balance.
Mm-hmm.
It's difficult to explain.
So was it, I guess it was reassuring when you had a diagnosis that you were able to go, oh, okay, cool. There was some sort of relief that came with that.
Yeah, it was a huge relief. And I got quite a lot of help after that.
Yes, of course.
I went to a wonderful tutor every 2 weeks for about two years. And my reading got much, much better.
Oh, wow.
More reading novels, and yes, that was good.
One of the things I really responded to when I discovered your work was a painting that actually includes text and writing in the painting.
Yeah.
And I love how you involve the written word like in your paintings. And there's a self-portrait of you called You Looking at Me? And it's got the word watching you looking at me.
Can you see a picture?
Yeah, it's that one there.
Oh, yeah.
And I love that painting so much. Yeah. And you've got the words back to front. So it's almost like a code you have to kind of decipher as you're looking at it as a viewer.
Yeah.
And I just found it so arresting because your stare that you've painted, it's a self-portrait.
It's like
you're
a
looking
challenge.
Right at
you're challenging the,
yeah,
viewer,
the viewer
to kind of decipher.
And I was so struck by
that
painting. I thought it was incredible work.
Yeah.
So can you talk a bit about using words in your work?
Text,
well, that's quite often what I do. I turn text around so it's awkward for people to read because I want them to really think about the reading of the text and decipher it and make it slightly awkward. Mm. Like, life is awkward, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's incredibly awkward. It's incredibly difficult. And I'm trying to kind of explore that idea within my work.
Mm-hmm. And you have a book as well called Awkward Beauty, which is a recent book. And I thought that title was so perfect because your paintings have such a kind of allure to them and a kind of sensual, the kind of nature and the experience of being within nature. Yes. And I really liked that idea of awkwardness.
The portraits, I think, because you challenge the viewer with your own body, what you're putting out there.
Yeah,
and you feel like, I think I've read something about, you mentioned something about like the male gaze and in art, and the fact is that because of your disability, you have a gaze on you on another level.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's that awkwardness that people find around looking at your work.
Yeah,
which in itself has a beauty in itself.
Yeah, yeah. I think you got it.
Yeah.
Got it, Mongo.
Oh, thank you, Lucy. Yeah. So why did you start with cityscapes? What was it about the outdoors, like bridges and architecture that...
I could get away. I mean, art school, I found interesting, but quite difficult because you were... thinking back, don't think I've actually worked this out before, but being at art school, you've never had time to draw over a long period of time from the model or from anything really, because they would want to keep the models moving. And I found that really difficult. I mean, I did do quite a lot of work for the model, but what I found was going out to the South Bank in those days, kind of 10 o'clock in the morning, it was really quiet.
Yeah, it's lovely.
No people. And I would take my pen and ink and chalk, and I could sit there for hours. I'd had a little stool and I'd prop my work up on my knees, pen and chalk, and I would do these drawings, which were, again, quite awkward. Mm. I used this peculiar pen called an automatic pen, but nothing less automatic in the world. And
what is an automatic pen? Is that the one that you sort of click down?
Yeah, it's just an Italian pen.
Oh, right. Okay.
Okay. And
so you can do it at any angle. You can
Any angle, but I used to use it on a straight line. And then I'd have a chalk.
Right.
And I would go over the line in chalk. Uh-huh. So in a way, I was reinforcing the surface of paper with the chalk. Mm. And I would spend several hours.
Wow. So you take, do you take quite a long time on work anyway, or you do you like to get something out?
No, I take quite a long time. Yeah. And it does vary quite a lot, but I take quite a long time.
And you were studying in the 70s, so you went to the Byam Shaw School of Drawing and Painting, which then became St Martin's, didn't it, later?
Yeah, it did.
Yeah, so it kind of evolved into a different school eventually.
It kind of evolved into
something. Yeah, and then you went to Camberwell School of Art from 76 to 79, and you got a first-class honours, which is, like, really impressive. And then you ended up doing a master's eventually at the RCA, Royal College of Art.
Yeah.
So when were you going to the South Bank? Was that kind of early 80s?
That,
when you were
at
RCA?
That was when I was at Camberwell.
Oh, Camberwell.
Right.
Yeah, yeah. Cool.
And then I went on to the RCA, and I kind of kept doing the same thing. Although I was able to model, and I would work for the model at the Royal College.
Was that like life drawing?
No, it painting, and I quite often would take 2 or 3 weeks over these paintings.
Oh, really?
You know.
So would you? Would the model be there present, or would you have to just work from a photo? Oh,
the
wow!
Yeah, present, and they were life size.
Wow.
Again, because at Cameron, when you had a life from situation. You know, like, if I measure you now, your head is that big, but you actually don't look that big, do you?
I've got quite a big head, yeah.
I mean, it might be his ego.
People think my ears are big. Yeah.
But both of you have got a huge ego. So you don't... You know, you are kind of life-size.
Yeah.
And if I was to paint you, I've always wanted to get that kind of idea of...
Scale,
but also something very real in front of you.
So do you like to paint life-size? Like we've got a painting to my right here, which is self-portrait. And the head, your head, is the size of your head in real life.
Yes.
And do you like to make works that are have that sort of scale, that size, that weight to them?
Yeah, I do.
So you wouldn't make little drawings and stuff. You kind of quite like to work big.
I do quite like to work big.
Yeah.
And that portrait that you were looking at is, let me think. A metre high.
Wow.
And I'm kind of squashed into it.
Right.
You're contained in the piece is sort of like keeping you in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The edges
yeah.
of the canvas.
Yeah.
Do you like that feeling of being like painting works where you are contained within the canvas? You use that. That's you have your parameters there.
Yeah. Yeah. That is something which is really important to me. It's a flat surface, and I'm working within that square or rectangle, and that is what I'm really interested in. And I wouldn't say total control over that surface, but nobody else can kind of interfere with it. Whereas in everything else in my life, I need help with, in a way.
But when you're painting, that's your zone. That's your zone. That's your domain. You've got full control over that.
Yeah.
And is that how you, as a teenager or whatever, when you were growing up in London, is that what the appeal of painting and of making art was for you?
Yeah, I think it was. Because there's lots of young people very vulnerable, and I think I was very vulnerable and unsure of myself.
Right.
And
But with art, you felt very confident.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah. That's it.
Yeah. So you work on your knees in your studio. Yeah. See, I was asking about the landscape ones being outside. Is that because you were saying about your allotment, you crawl around, and I was imagining when you paint outside, do you do that with the paper on your lap and the canvas on your lap? Or are you sometimes on the floor making those?
Not anymore. I used to do it on that, but somehow that doesn't quite work. Mm-hmm. Now I have a drawing board on the floor, and I'm kneeling, leaning over it. Okay. That is probably why I've got such a bad back now.
From making work, do you think?
I do think. Wow. But on the other hand, if I'm standing up, I mean, I actually, if I'm on my hands and knees, I even tip over on my hands and knees.
Right.
So it's less possible
to fall.
Literally.
Got it. And do you feel more connected, like closer to working on your hands and knees on the floor? Do you feel closer to the painting? Do you feel like that helps with creating the work, or do you find it difficult with the perspective of, you know, because sometimes you make paintings, an artist will look at the painting, then take some distance on it, and then go back in. Do you feel like your style is so successful because you don't have that freedom as much to do that?
Perhaps. I mean, I do step back, but most of the stepping back is like at the end of the day, you're totally kind of saturated and you don't really know what you've done. Mm-hmm. And then you walk out of the studio and you quite often think, oh, that's maybe quite good.
Wow.
And then you come back in the next day and you think, oh, God, that's crap.
Does that happen a lot?
So it's like a constant struggle, isn't it? Like a battle with the painting.
Yeah. You're kind of going backwards and forwards and having a kind of conversation with it. That's the painting.
Yeah.
I actually heard you talk with, we're sat next to a painting here of one of your friends. And
Tom Shakespeare.
And I heard you talk with him, and you said something about how sometimes people think when you're an artist, it's all happy and jolly.
Yeah.
And especially with your work, because the colours are so bright and vibrant and alive, that somehow making the act of making a painting must be such a joyous experience. But in fact, it's not.
No, it's not. And I mean, it's actually got better. And it's a funny thing to say. I mean, at one point, Natasha doesn't know this, but...
This is Natasha who works for the gallery, who's with us now at the moment.
And I used to be in the studio with tears rolling down my face, painting. But now there are no tears, and my studio feels very safe. I really like my studio now. Wow. And you know, maybe it's just growing up and losing that kind of, I don't know. Maybe I just feel more confident. about my work.
And in yourself, I've heard you say you've never felt more like content in your own body.
Yeah, that's right, really. And
that must come through the work.
Yeah. And going to the studio every day, which I don't go every day, of course, but my ambition, when I get out of bed, my ambition is to get to the studio. And it's like all these things, like going to the gym, trying to get the back a bit stronger, and doing various emails to Natasha, whoever, and then like you know they always talk to things, and you get distracted. But I usually get to the studio, like to be perfectly honest, like 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock, but then I'd like to work till 7 o'clock.
Right, until it gets dark, or...
Yeah.
And you have a real drive, don't you? Like, it's like a need within you to make art almost every day.
I'm not going to go that far. I mean, if you start not going to the studio, you lose contact with the actual work.
Yes, yes, yes.
Don't you?
I think that's anything creative. If you don't keep it up, like, I'm an actor, and if like other actors, when you're out of work, you then do lose confidence in yourself and your ability, and you think, oh, when you go back into the work, it's harder to, it's not as easy to pick it up. It doesn't feel as natural. Yeah.
No, and if recently I've done these two big shows this year.
Yeah.
And I thought,
congratulations.
Oh, kind of wiped. But I'm just beginning to get back into my work.
To create a body of work for the next show. Do you know what your next show is, what you're working towards?
No, thank God.
All right. But no pressures.
No pressure at the moment. But I'm sure some of you think of something. But I managed to do my painting for the 50th anniversary. And I think...
Oh, of the gallery, of Flowers Gallery. Oh, right, so you've made a work for that already?
Yeah. I think Natasha said it to past master.
Have you seen the work?
It's brilliant, yeah. It's a self-portrait. It's a really beautiful work.
When is your 50th anniversary of the gallery?
It's 10th of February.
Okay.
So that's great.
Quite soon. Yeah, it's a big one.
Oh, amazing.
Can we go back in time a bit? So we have a lot of young artists, and also not necessarily young, but often emerging or beginning artists. It could be any age, actually, because there's all kinds of people accessing art at different ages now, which is great.
That's what I feel like, emerging.
Do you? Yeah.
Would you like, you class yourself as an emerging artist still?
Well, in a funny kind of way, yeah.
Yeah.
But go on.
So when you left college... I heard that it was quite a difficult time, because I imagine it must be when you finally leave art school and you've lost that kind of protective environment that you've had.
Yeah.
Can you talk a bit about that leading up to meeting Angela Flowers, who then represented you? Because it must have been quite a difficult time, that transition.
Yeah.
And I think it's quite interesting to actually hear that story.
Yeah, but it was. I mean, I'm really slow on the uptake, yeah. So I burned a studio, which I got my dad to build the walls. And I sat there and I thought, oh, nobody's coming to visit me, you know. And I was just very lucky. There were all sorts of serendipitous things.
Events.
Shall I go through some of them?
Yeah, sure.
They all have a knock. The Arts Council bought two paintings, and because they couldn't agree whether to have portrait or landscape, I think they bought
one of each.
One of each.
And when was that?
A long time.
Wow.
Ago.
Probably like 80s or something.
Yeah. I'm looking at
86.
That's so cool. 86,
yeah.
Okay.
So
that must have been a boost to have the Arts Council buy your work.
Yeah. Although, you know, you are incredibly arrogant when you're... you just feel quite right too.
Right.
Like justify. Yeah, like as it should be.
Yeah.
Sarah Kent, when I left the Royal College, Mario Dupski had recommended me, I think, to her, and she wrote two little lines on my show.
So she's an arts reviewer.
Yeah,
really
she
important.
Was a really influential art critic, yeah. Sarah Kent. Yeah, amazing.
And on my MA show. A guy called, Tony Bevin, thank you, Tony, came to my studio and saw my work on London. And he'd never met me before. And he said, oh my, you know, this is great. I'm going to put you forward for Artist of the Day.
Artist of the Day?
Yeah.
Yeah. So did you run an arts culture show or was it a...
Artist of the Day is something they do at Flowers Gallery.
Oh, okay.
Right.
Basically have an established artist picking a
An established artist picking a lesser known artist to do a one day show over a certain amount of weeks.
Wow.
It's kind of changed a few times. We do it every other year, but we do have one coming up this summer as well. And it's just a really good platform. It's a very busy few weeks, but it's, you know, show change every day.
So Tony was one of your artists who would recommend who to... Oh, I see, right.
So it's... Cool, great idea. Yeah, we did it a few years ago as well. And we've had quite a few of our artists, actually, that we represent now have come from,
from
Artists
that
of the Day.
So and this is where Lucy came from.
Yeah. Before then, also, I think I was at Mario Dupski's funeral. And Sarah Kent clicked, I think, or she saw me at Flowers because I happened to be visiting a Nicola Hicks show. And she remembered who I was, and she'd done this piece.
In your MA show,
And mentioned it to Matthew, which really helped a lot, I think. And after the Artist of the Day, they offered me one person show the following year. And in between that, I met my husband, which was a really good thing.
Is he an artist?
No.
Does he like art?
He does like art. He's a cracking photographer, but keeps it very private.
Okay. Hides his light under his bushel.
Yeah, he's a bit shy. And where was I going with this?
She said at the time that you were linked up with Sarah Kent and Matthew Flowers and then
you did your
husband.
First solo show.
Solo. So it all felt at the time everything was, the stars were aligning.
It kind of, that was a bit like a tiny snowball.
Accumulation.
I think William Packer covered my work.
Who was William Packer? Was he a reviewer?
He was a reviewer of
a critic, was he? Financial Times.
Financial Times.
Wow.
And he just came in, I think, to Artist of the Day and put painting mine on the front page.
It was a wow.
That must be so exciting.
Not the front page, but, you know, in
the arts section.
Yeah,
amazing.
That's
great. Whatever. And then I had the one-minute person show, and I saw nothing. I mean, I had very low expectations, okay? And I went off with my husband, newly met man, to Madrid. And came back, and said, "Do you know the Met from New York has just walked in and bought, I don't know, about 3 pieces of your work?" And I went, "Is that good?" She went, "Yes, it's good."
There's nothing better. The Metropolitan Museum in New York bought 3 of your paintings from your first solo show.
Yeah.
I mean, what an endorsement.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, "What the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass!" So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, this is Russell Tovey and Robert Diamond from Talk Arts, the arts podcast. And we're here today with Budweiser beer. And we're going to be talking about something very, very important to both of us, aren't we, Rob?
That's right. Budweiser, the king of beers, has joined forces with legendary artist Sir Peter Blake, the godfather of British pop art and someone that both of us have adored since we were kids.
I've loved pop art since I was a kid, and Sir Peter Blake has been a constant for me, alongside other pop art artists, the Americans like Andy Warhol, Roy Lichtenstein, Keith Haring. And I got into pop art, Rob, because I loved cartoons growing up. I mean, I still love animation. But suddenly I discovered that so many artists were referencing comic strips and cartoons in their artworks, and I could go and see them in museums, and I suddenly didn't need to grow up. And Sir Peter Blake was one of these artists that meant so much to me. And I think people, if they don't know the name Sir Peter Blake, you would certainly know his work. The album cover for The Beatles, Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club, Oasis's Stop the Clocks. These are iconic art historical moments that this artist has actually been at the forefront of.
And you've met him, haven't you?
I've met him, yeah, at the South Bank Show Awards years ago. I was there for the History Boys, and he was there, and I got incredibly excited and met him. But you've not met him before, have you, Rob?
I have. I've actually even been to his house and hung out with him and his wife, and I got to make an amazing print with him, which was a huge privilege, actually. It was a real career moment for me. So Budweiser and Sir Peter Blake have come together to unite, and they have created an exclusive limited edition beer can, which doubles as a collectible piece of pop art.
And it was on display at London's Truerman Brewery on the 23rd and 24th of March this year, if you were lucky enough to get there. And also, were you one of the lucky few that were able to get one of the signed beer cans by Sir Peter Blake himself? And there was something very special there, wasn't there, Rob? What was that?
They've actually made the first ever fridge frame, which kind of is reminiscent of what we would be, you know, accustomed with in terms of a museum exhibit. Yeah. But this fridge frame is designed to display the limited edition can of beer as a work of art, but also keeps the beer cool.
Okay, I need a fridge full of fridge frames because this sounds incredible. So Peter Blake's work adorns the cans with all of his eye-catching simplicity. It features the Budweiser's iconic red bow tie logo, but it's encompassed by the artist's signature and his use of block colours and icons. They unveiled this artistic can in all of its glory in one of these fridge frames, as Rob said, which is very exciting. The limited edition cans are available to purchase as a four-pack for a limited time only in selected Tesco stores nationwide.
Budweiser and Sir Peter Blake, thank you for bringing us this cultural moment. I love it when art reaches new audiences, and I really feel like this is going to go into everyone's homes, and it's really joyous. So head over to Tesco, pick up a four-pack. Thank you, Budweiser.
But also, if you want to get this collectible piece of art at home, Budweiser also giving people the chance to own their very own exclusive fridge frame. Beer and art lovers can register their interest by visiting www.budweiser.co.uk/Sir Peter Blake collab. That's budweiser.co.uk/Sir Peter Blake collab. Budweiser and Talk Art with Sir Peter Blake.
And they're actually the works you were talking about earlier, where you were going to the South Bank.
Yes.
Yeah, they have one called Winter South Bank from 1987.
You've got it.
Yeah, so you've been to see these yourself with your husband. You went to New York and saw them in person, right?
We did later on. And we had to take one picture. And that of me in the front of the page, because they didn't let you take pictures, but they got it.
If you're the artist, you get to take a picture. You can be a bit cheeky this time. What did that feel like to see your paintings in New York?
It was really great. I mean, I really did not quite take on board how big that museum is.
Yeah.
You know,
how important.
And they had my piece of work with a few other British painters. Mm-hmm. And that was really exciting.
That's so brilliant. And I read at the time that you saw work by Jackson Pollock then in the flesh for the first time ever.
Yeah, that's right.
And that really inspired you.
Yeah.
And when I read that, I thought that's really interesting because Jackson always worked on the floor as well. He always put his canvases on the floor and worked on them from above.
He did put them above.
And so that energy of transferring paint to canvas is the same sort of energy that you have, because you're working at them from that sort of angle as well.
I suppose that's right. And I really like those paintings. And I also realised American Expressionist painting, but I've never been able to work totally abstract way because A, I'm British. I mean, that sounds really stupid. But, you know, we're always cramped, slightly cramped.
Cramped, yeah.
In spaces.
Right.
And I needed solidity of something real to look at,
got
it. To really spot my work on. But that didn't mean that I didn't admire these.
Yeah, these brushes. It's about knowing, having your own instincts and knowing what sort of artist you are. How would you describe yourself as an artist? What would you say you were?
God.
Sorry. Putting you on the spot.
Boring. An expressionist.
An expressionist.
Figurative painter.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
Yeah.
But.
Sorry.
Go on.
Oh, I was going to say that the works that got bought by the Met were of the South Bank, and they were very, they're quite almost like accurate probably to what the scenery was.
Yeah.
But I feel like as your works developed into the more recent years, maybe from 2011 to the present day, your landscapes to me seem to have this really transformative element to them. So yes, they're depicting landscapes that you might live near in Shropshire. Or,
yeah.
But they also have a kind of imaginary element too. So you might like remove or edit what you're seeing for the beauty of the picture. And can you talk a bit about that? Because I find that so joyful, and I think it really brings, like, we're surrounded now by a few different works and like these ones here where you've almost got this kind of mark making. So it's much more about, well,
it's like
experience.
There's a reflection in the water there, but water, it's playing with,
Is that an interesting transition for you as an artist?
I think it is. And I think my work has developed. And I do edit out stuff, obviously. And it's not... It's perhaps more about the colour now and how colour works within painting. That's a strange painting.
I'm so happy it's here because that was one that I haven't obviously seen in real life.
Yeah.
And I saw that on the internet.
Did you?
Or a similar one anyway, but I just loved this. It actually made me think a bit of like Stanley Whitney, kind of like 1990s work.
Well, it's got a musical tonality to it. Do you ever paint to music?
I don't paint to music because it would totally use up my mind.
It take the focus away from.
It would take the focus away, and I'm as boring as Ditchwater. Okay, and Radio 4 keeps
you going.
Keeps me alive.
I think it does for a lot of people.
It just uses up that part of my brain that would go off on one.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah.
And so I can concentrate on the work. Whereas if I had music, I'd be too emotionally involved actually in the music.
Mm-hmm. Interesting, yeah.
To not just put it into work.
Yeah.
And you've actually been on Radio 4 recently with your friend Tom Shakespeare, who was sat by the painting of here.
I have.
People should listen to that because it's a really brilliant, you can hear it on iPlayer. And it's a wonderful visit where he comes to your studio in preparing a text that he was going to write for one of your books. But I love that interview. It's a really wonderful portrait of you.
So you were talking about emotions in your work, and I've heard you describe your work containing a spark of anger.
Yep.
And do you using the emotion of anger in your work, is that important to you? Is that something you've really discovered later in life that's what?
I think it's always there, you know, because when things are really difficult, you do can get really angry. I mean, and it's not necessarily just throwing plates around the room. Not quite that kind of anger. But it's that kind of energy that anger can give you, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
It's
amazing that you can harness that, what is a negative energy, and turn it into a positive and use that as a driving force in your art.
Yeah.
Because your works have so much emotion in them. There's so much to read in, but you can feel an energy, your energy in the works, especially more so in the landscapes because of the mark making there. Yeah. It's amazing. It's like beautiful and amazing.
Thank you.
You're very welcome.
One of my favorite paintings by you was called The Shadow of Life from 2012, and it was actually in the National Portrait Gallery award. And that, what year was that? 2013 it got the award, I think. But I love that painting so much.
Yeah.
And it's got a kind of shadow on the left-hand side.
Do you know why I think you respond to that as well? I think he's one of his favourite artists is Frida Kahlo.
Yes.
There's the double portrait that Frida Kahlo did, which is sort of the interior and the exterior, which I think, again, is what your work really covers, is a lot of the interior is being portrayed on the canvas.
Yeah, yeah. And the kind of exterior in the actual analogy, but also quite often I do have a shadow. What's it called again?
It's called The Shadow of Life.
Yeah. The Shadow of Life. And in a way, that can be flipped around. And the shadow of life can be the shadow of death, can't it?
Oh.
Because, you know,
it's always with you.
It's always with you.
Yeah.
Kind of stalking you behind you.
And
it's quite a lot of my work does have shadows in it.
Right. And you're not fearful of that, you're embracing that and accepting of it all.
Yeah. I think if you remember being depressed, there is just kind of,
a dark cloud.
Shadow, isn't it? Around, which...
I think a lot of people could recognise that emotion.
I think also why I connected with this painting in particular is the presentation of your body and your kind of stance, the way that you're standing.
Yes.
And it's so kind of true to how you are.
Mm.
But this idea that you've had to almost confront yourself, you know, through the act of painting yourself,
and
you're having a conversation with yourself.
Mm.
And then I then respond to it with my own relationship with my own body. And there's this kind of like commonality between all of us that we all have our own, you know, complex feelings with the way we look and how we feel about ourselves. And that painting particularly just really spoke to me because of that, which is actually similar to Frida Kahlo, because growing up, you know, seeing her self-portraits and also the way that she had her accident and then had a physical suffering or whatever. But I always, even though I'm able-bodied or whatever, I still feel a complete kind of connection with you, you know, through just the experience of being human. You know, this kind of, and that's what I think is such beautiful psychology in the work, you know, that is such a joy to experience.
And it is all about being human, isn't it? I mean, that's what I want to paint about, really.
Mm.
Yeah.
So we ask every guest that comes on two very important questions. The first one we ask is, if you could do an art heist, you could steal any artwork in the world and you can take it with you and we'll help you. It could be anything you want.
Yeah, it can be as big as you want.
As or small it can be as tiny, you want. It could slip in your pocket.
And it could be anywhere.
What is your touchstone artwork that you would have?
Okay, well, I have thought about this because I've heard that you asked a question, you know, and I'm going to take that Jackson Pollock.
You're going to take Jackson Pollock you saw in the Met?
From the Met, to absolutely.
So how big is that? Because we've got to help you with this.
Okay. I think it must be at least 3 metres,
wow.
4 metres
okay. Right.
By 5 metres. But you know what? It's relative.
It's like a constellations one, so it's
yeah.
it's like it's typical Jackson Pollock.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, wow. Yeah. But I also take the Rembrandt as well.
The Rembrandt?
From the...
Kenwood House.
Yeah.
Yes, the self-portrait.
Yeah, I'll take that one as well.
Yeah.
You mind me having two?
No, we love you having two.
No. Yeah. No, we're good.
I want to go to Kenwood House right now.
I'll go to New York. I'll go to New York because I'm there anyway soon. So I'll get the Pollock, and then you can go to.
I think I'm coming out, so I can.
You used to live in Hampstead, didn't you?
So I used to live in Hampstead, exactly.
So you can go to Kenwood House.
I have access to Kenwood House. I know we're going
to
do well.
You go back to Shropshire and then just check the postman, and they might they'll be coming through the door soon.
Well, that would be worth building a new house, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it would, yeah.
Is your studio in your house?
No, my studio that's 6 miles away. Mm.
So how do you get there every day?
I drive.
Right, wow.
Yeah, I have to drive. But, my house would not be big enough.
To house the Jackson Pollock?
To house the Jackson Pollock.
Or your own paintings.
Or Lucy Jones's paintings.
Yeah, I was going to say, Lucy Jones's paintings are getting bigger and bigger.
They are.
Apparently, I think after this interview, we're going to see a 2 or 3 metre one, though. Like a really big one, so it's very exciting. And that actually leads us on to the next question, what you ask every guest, which is, what is your favourite colour? And that's an interesting question to ask you, because your painting is so much about colour. It's becoming more and more so, I think.
It is, and... Only an answer and say it depends on what colour you put next to another colour.
Right. So it changes depending...
It changes.
Yeah, the combination of colours.
A combination of colours.
Yeah.
You know.
But you don't shy away from colour, Lucy. You are a colourist. You love colour.
I don't shy away from colour. That's true. I can't deny it. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Have you always had that sensibility?
Nope, I worked from Camberwell, which was very much about linear and drawing and tonal structures. And then when I went to Bard College, I thought I would try and explore colour more.
Embrace colour more.
Yes. Well,
you've had comparisons to David Hockney a lot.
Yeah.
How do you feel about that? Is that a...
That's very nice. I really like his earlier work. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I really like his earlier work.
Mm-hmm. I do too, actually. I love all his early paintings and his drawings and etchings. And they're just incredible. And they were so ahead of his time.
That one he
so
did
incredibly
and
bold
openly and really proudly gay.
Yeah,
as
gay
well.
As well. Yeah.
But there was one he painted called We Two Boys Clinging
it's
Together.
An amazing painting.
I remember when I first saw that, I was slightly taken aback.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And just to think at that time to be making that kind of work.
Yeah.
You know, to be so open and honest about who you are.
Who you are.
Yeah. It's a brilliant thing.
Who are your inspirations art-wise? I know Toulouse-Lautrec was a major one.
Yes,
you saw.
I heard that.
Well, that was when I was really, like, a teenager.
Right.
Or... Yeah, but the skinny, I have a lot. I've got Leon Kossoff.
Mm. Leon Kossoff, yes.
Partly because these people taught me a little bit.
His use of paint, these kind of...
Yeah, this kind of thread which runs... Through.
I can see a lot of Frank Auerbach in your landscapes.
Yeah, Auerbach, definitely.
Mm. Yeah.
And the German expressionist.
Yeah.
Yes.
That Bezelitz.
George Bezelitz. The upside down.
Upside down. Thing,
yes.
Where he really, really uses colour a lot in those. And I really like that.
But also... distorts the body in a certain way, doesn't he? And yes, wow.
Yeah.
There was another artist I'd like you to tell us about before we wrap up called Emily Charmy, who was an inspiration to you, was she? Or
She
was a French avant-garde artist, but she was ahead of her time, and that really inspired you.
Yeah. Mainly because she's a mummer. But working, I mean, outside when I was at the Royal College, I used to wonder what, when we left, what happened to women painters? Did they all kind of fall into ditch and get buried? Because they just didn't seem to be any around. I mean, there were a couple of tutors. There was Carol Hodgson and there was Jennifer Dorrance, and they were working.
Uh-huh.
But there just weren't that many women painters. I mean, now there's Jenny Savile.
Savile, yes. Mm. Well, like now, contemporary. You mean contemporary now working? Or?
Yeah.
We've got like Tracy Emmons doing painting now and
Lynette Yadon-Boachi.
Yes,
love her paintings. Gabrielle Montour is one that we mentioned in the book.
Yes. Yes. But Steve, I do like a lot of different artists.
Yeah.
Kind of feed my work.
Yeah.
And so do you think being a woman artist was another kind of challenge for you to be accepted in the art world?
Yeah, I think it kind of has all added to it. But everybody from my tutors have been very generous to me.
Yeah.
You know, the Art Council collection. That wouldn't happen without one of my tutors being on that committee.
Right.
So, you know.
So you had certain people champion you and mentor you and support you.
Yes.
Which has helped.
Yeah.
And I think that's more serendipitous than luck with you. I think because of your talent, had to happen. And I think that's...
I think when I've spoken to a few people about your work, everyone is really passionate about it. And I think once you discover you, it's just so genuinely good as well. Like the what you're a very skilled artist, but there's also this kind of, you know, personality. And even looking at this painting of Tom Shakespeare here, it's just brilliant. Like totally captures him and his energy and his personality. And
unique take on identity.
Yeah, totally.
What you're doing. That's,
And it's celebrating life as well. The highs, the lows, like all of it. Yeah.
Really, I think celebrate him. I'm really pleased with that painting.
Yeah, and that took 6 months, didn't it? It was like quite
a long time.
Yeah, amazing.
Bloody wheelchair.
You had to get it just right, yeah.
I mean, the wheels are not straight down.
Yeah,
got it.
You know, it's one of those posh ones that he can really move around quickly. You can never keep
Oh, they're up. Really lightweight, aren't they? They're kind of like titanium.
Yeah. And he's such a flash kit anyway.
Amazing.
It's interesting as well because it's such an immediate painting. Like you can really feel him laughing. Like you can just imagine him sitting here with us right now laughing.
And the scale, and the idea
that took 6 months to make is so fascinating. We met an artist, which I think you heard the episode of, Joyce Pensato. You said you listened to it recently.
Yes.
Because we did her final interview. And she also has this energy in her work, which is, she was really inspired by German Expressionism too. But there's this real immediacy and like joy of life and kind of energy to it, which could take her many months to create. It's such a mad thing in a way.
Mm. Yeah.
But does that kind of annoy you, how long things can take?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, wouldn't it be nice if one could just go into the studio and do it really quickly? But it doesn't work like that. You might think it does, you might hope it does.
Because
you start painting and you think, oh, this is going really well. And then halfway through, you know that it's crap.
Oh.
And then you have to go back.
Yeah.
You know?
How many did you work on at the same time?
One or two, not many.
Right.
No. But I quite often keep them once they're finished, like at the side of the studio.
Yes.
So you're just kind of looking at
it. You sit with them for a while, yeah.
Checking it out.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
amazing.
So if we did like an x-ray of your paintings, would there be many sort of versions underneath, or is it Do you know what I mean? Like, is there a lot of history?
Do you overwork everything?
Under that one, there would be quite a lot of movement. Wow. Yeah, because of the wheelchair.
Because of the wheelchair.
But also getting it exactly where I wanted on that camera.
Yeah. So brilliant. And I noticed a lot of the articles that have been written about you, they've been by women writers, which is so brilliant, like women supporting women. What about this idea of success to you? Like, has it been a blessing in a way to get discovered and to have this kind of, you describe yourself as emerging now. Has it been good to have a bit of space to just make your work and not be bothered too much with?
Yeah, I mean, it's always, I need the space to make my work. Mm. My studio is very quiet and it's very out in the middle of nowhere. Mm. Natasha hasn't seen it.
Still waiting.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I've seen many pictures of it.
So it's a very private space.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In a funny kind of way, I didn't realise when I emerged from the Rome Scholarship in those first few years, everything was
That was in 1982, the pre-de Rome, just to let everyone know, Prize of Rome.
Going really well. And then it tapered off. And it has picked up in the last kind of 8 years, 10 years, which is very nice.
So it should.
It's funny that whole amazing. Journey, isn't it?
Like, because you work really, really hard.
Yeah.
I've always ticked over, but it's nice to think that people recognising my work a bit more.
Yeah,
in a wider context. Because I think lots of artists know my work.
Yes.
I think
it's true. I think that's part of the struggle of being an artist. Like, if you're just starting out in your career now, it's like you might have these moments of, like you were saying, you went to Rome and you had that pre de Rome and then you got your first class honours degree and all that stuff, and then they're met by your work, but then it might get quiet again. So you have kind of moments of like waves, that snowball, and then it might stop for a while.
Again,
like
with any creative business, that is exactly how it goes.
Yeah, exactly.
Novelist, singer, actor, writer, it always, you have fits and spurts, don't you?
Yeah.
But you've just got to stay on that creative train.
Yeah. On the train.
On the train.
Keep going on the train.
We're all on the train.
Well, thank you so much.
Thanks,
it's been such a privilege to speak with you. We love you so much, and I'm so grateful to have discovered your work in the last year.
So glad. Tell me you really love me.
We do, and we're going to do some pictures now for our Instagram.
Yeah.
So,
and for everyone listening, there are three really great books that are available at Flowers Gallery. One is the one that I mentioned, Awkward Beauty, but there's also one dedicated to landscapes and then one dedicated to the portraits, which even though people like to separate, I think they're both completely linked to each other.
Yes.
And they're equally as important as each other. Yeah. And they're all self-portraits in the sense, aren't they? Because even the landscapes, it's like your relationship to the nature. And
Well, look, can I thank you for doing such a nice interview, which I was pretty scared about.
Oh, were you? Well, thank you so much.
You sound very friendly. And you are.
Oh,
I find out they really are friendly.
We are.
But also, I think we choose all the guests on the podcast because there's no one producing it. We just do it on our own.
Yeah.
And it is very personal to us. Yeah. And we only want to speak to people that we really have that connection with, even if we don't know them yet. Like, we've never met you before today.
Yeah.
But we already felt a kind of connection to your work and therefore to you. Yeah. So, thank you for having us.
Yeah. Thank you, Natasha, for organising this.
Thank you very much.
Yes.
And for everyone listening, we will be posting images of this room, actually, because I'm going to start taking pictures of all these paintings, but of also all the artworks we've spoken about throughout the episode. And you can see that on Instagram at Talk Art. And you're not on Instagram, are you, yourself? You don't do social media.
Please, I'm so sorry. I have to get somebody to show me.
Yeah, well, honestly, don't worry about that. But Flowers, You are on Instagram, aren't you? What's your Instagram?
We are, just at Flowers Gallery.
Exactly. So if you go to at Flowers Gallery, you'll be able to see some of Lucy's work.
Yeah. I'll get to see my own work.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, thank you so
Thanks,
much.
Thanks, everyone.
We'll be back very soon. Thank you,
Lucy. You've been listening to Talk Art with Robert Diamond and Russell Tovey.
Follow us on Instagram at Talk Art, where you can view images of all artworks discussed in today's episode, with music by Jack Northover.
Subscribe to Talk Art at Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Acast, or wherever it is that you get your podcasts.
Give us a rating and write us a comment. Thanks for listening.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Want to join a film club that has real frank discussions talking about films that you actually want to watch?
Well, then look no further, because we are Frank Film Club with me, Maisie Williams. And each week we watch a film and then come together and obsess over it, or sometimes absolutely slate it. Either way, there's always a lot to say. And the films that we pick range all the way from like 90s and noughties classics all the way up to new releases that are coming out every single week. And sometimes we get our listeners to pick for us.
And we all work in the film industry, don't we, ladies?
Indeed.
So we really love to look at specifically how a film was made.
So if this sounds like your bag, then come and have a listen to Frank Film Club. And remember, absolutely everyone is welcome in this club.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.